death in Paris. In a miserable lodging house in February 1868, Abel Barbon died of carbon dioxide asphyxiation by means of a charcoal stove. Abel, who was 29 years old and worked in a railway office in Paris, left a memoir that testifies both to his high intelligence and to the desolation that led to his suicide. It appears that he was caught between two jobs, neither of which matched his abilities or took account of his experience. Friendless in the capital and frequently unemployed, convinced that he had no chance of the companionship and sexual satisfaction marriage would offer, he saw his existence as useless to others and crushing to himself. Abel, who was baptized Adelaide Herculine Barbin, had grown up as a girl. She had spent most of her life in all-female institutions, and after coming top in the examinations, had gone on to teach in a girls' boarding school. There she fell in love with a woman teacher, gradually recognizing to her own surprise the nature of this passion, which was consummated in due course. The two shared a bed for many months until the suspicions of those around them and the falseness of their position prompted Adelaide Herculine to consult a priest who passed her on to the medical authorities. The doctor found a person of slight but broadly masculine appearance with rudimentary versions of the genital organs of both sexes. There was no womb. In 1860, at the age of 21, Adelaide Herculine was re-registered officially as Abel and lived from then on as a man. The early parts of the memoir, somewhat literary and sentimental, nevertheless clearly depict a girlhood of relative social integration and considerable academic success. In telling Abel's story, however, the text becomes rambling, repetitive, and sometimes incoherent. Even so, it is clear that Abel feels alone and disgraced, unable to return to those who have known him as a woman. More aware now of what is expected sexually, he sees no hope of a future relationship to match the first. Meanwhile, the jobs he applies for all demand experience. Abel's experience has been as a schoolmistress, but at this time a career as a teacher in a girls' school was not an option for a man. Hungry, he is reduced to asking his poverty-stricken mother for money. This, we may construe, is still more humiliating for a son than it would be for a daughter. Socialized, culturally constructed in a world where sexual roles were dramatically polarized, Herculine Abel cannot survive as either a woman or a man. Having been recruited as a woman by the meanings of femininity she has done her best to inhabit, she cannot simply become a different masculine subject, sharing and reproducing the meanings that make possible male bonding and conventional male behavior. The polarity between the forms of subjectivity appropriate to men and women could hardly have been more extreme than in the mid-19th century bourgeois and provincial France. It is easy to see, though the author of the memoir cannot theorize it, how difficult it would be, both socially and psychologically, to become a member of the opposite sex in such circumstances. Virginia Woolf made high comedy out of the reverse transformation in her novel Orlando in 1928. Waking up to find herself suddenly, as if by magic, a woman, after growing up as a man, Orlando has to learn to cope with the difficulty of getting around in skirts, retreating where she has been accustomed to pursue, choosing whether to yield or refuse when she has previously learned to insist. Now she finds that women are not obedient, chaste, scented, and exquisitely apparelled by nature. Instead, they can only acquire these virtues by the most tedious discipline, and Orlando reluctantly sets about the task. Herculine Barbin's predicament was no joke, however. It was not eased by the insistence of her priest and the medical profession that she must be reassigned to her true sex. Sexually relaxed though we seem to ourselves to have become, our own society still does not feel comfortable with intersex babies, and the doctors generally take it upon themselves to determine the true sex of such children, often if the adjustment is minor, without consulting their parents. Western culture decrees that there are two sexes. The English language, as the inscription of a culture, offers two pronouns, one masculine and one feminine, and subjects are expected to identify with one or the other. The most scrupulously non-sexist parents have no choice but to speak of their children as he or she, and children generally do their best to become what language tells them they are.